go to Mike in Madison, Wisconsin. Hi, Mike. Mike, are you with us?
Great show.
Good evening out there, John or Joan Q Radio listener. I know who you are. You've been targeted by our demographics and strategic game playing department here at the Z. And you've been the butt of a zeroing in technology effect that you haven't read about yet in those professional journals that you subscribe to. I'm not going to give the whole thing away, but you may start to have certain attitudes shifting. And of course, the Z will be a big part of that. Sort of an ambient attitude re-shadow casting technique. Employs various sophisticated conceptual technologies not developed by the military sector of the Big Brother Incorporated imbroglio that you know nothing about. Therefore, it's sophisticated. And it is aimed at a psychological vector near you. So for you pleasure seekers out there, or industrious career trackers, or even the slackered, sideways torqued, directionless drifters, this program's for you. Adam Newton on the Big Z-ster Radio. WZBC, of course. 90 3/100% pure, authentic, real radio. As prophesied by the ancient seers of the ancient worlds. Besides Nostradamus, of course, who everyone... and Edgar Cayce, but the unknown seers have predicted the emergence of ZBC as a tactical force to be reckoned with in the psycho-ambient terrain of the modern second millennial world. No commercial potential. Part one was blown clear of the ground zero test range by the hockey game. But part two remains intact and sidling crab-like on the test range floor as I speak. Going till 2 o'clock as usual. Gary Geiserman at the controls. Or is it vice versa vice? Anyway, it's New Metaphysics, which is spelled backwards. But I can't say it. It's forward direction, because that would invoke a curse, the likes of which, I mean, I don't want to deal with it. You can do it at home. Something you can do at home. With nary another word.
This is Crispin Glover at WZCBC.
Where you wanted to be and what it was that influenced you and what it was that got you started.
When I was at school, I was in an art stream, and I guess everything was geared for me to be an artist, a visual artist, and a painter, and or a commercial artist. And I think for about the first 6 months when I left school, I was a commercial artist, making money that way. But I was playing saxophone in the evenings, right, with rhythm and blues bands. And I found that I didn't like doing designer work for sort of raincoats and slimming biscuits. a now defunct slimming biscuit, actually, that we worked on called AIDS.
Called what?
It was called AIDS. Yeah. That was the slimming biscuit that we were working on. That is no more, of course. I found that I was earning as much money playing the saxophone in the evening, and it was giving me a lot more pleasure because I was my own master of that.
I grew up in the Midwest, which is tough to begin with, and it's even tougher when almost everyone around you is listening like, yeah.
Cindy Cox, Control, Vivid Film. Melissa Hill, Bad Wives, Vivid Film. Missy Satar, Wicked Picture. Julie Rage, Tattletale, Vivid Film. Misty Rain, Red Five Diaries, Cal Vista Films, Metro. Nikki Sin, Tight Spot, Western Visuals. Stephanie Swift, Temporary Position, Vivid Film. And T.O.B. Kai, The Show 2. Girls, want to read the winner?
Yes,
you bet.
And the winner is
Melissa Hill for Bad Wives!
Thank you.
president we'd never heard of. He'd been in South America, actually, in Iran, in Jamana. He'd been in every port town throughout the Mediterranean, always searching for an altered state, some new vector of consciousness. And by the time he came to Harvard and we were there, he was rather... I was a little bored with our gung-ho, love engineering, psychedelic rah-rah-rah. He wanted, scientific research. He wanted to pinpoint different brain centers and computers, and the man was simply ahead of us, and I pay great tribute to Burroughs in Flashback.
About a week on the lot in 1937, and Adolf Zucker, who was head of Paramount, sent me to Columbia to deliver a message to Harry Cohen, who was the head of Columbia Pictures. And he's sitting at his desk, which is elevated about 6 inches off the floor, and he's on the phone, other hand extended. He's getting a manicure, a barber's cutting his hair, and he's getting his shoes shined. Now, that's something you're going to see, a man on the phone, head of a studio, manicure, shoe shine, and a haircut all at the same time.
Risk was out. No, risk was in. The new risk group. And believe me, you would be amazed how many of us in this room fit into that group. I certainly did. I did. And the Christian Scientist in me was saying, simply don't turn the radio on at 5 o'clock. Don't turn it on. Because in Christian Science, to name the disease is to get it.
Some Cathode Ray Tube now, new CD. Charles, Cathode Ray Tube himself, performed live at the station several times. There's a new CD out on CFOM Recordings. And lives right here in our own hometown, USA. So congratulations, Cathode Ray Tube. And tonight's show is Jews in the Wood, part two. Obviously, part one of Jews in the Wood was performed last week at this venue. So on with the show, Maestro.
Create a conflict as soon as you can.
Gene Ross, all the writers, reviewers at ABN, Kenny Guarino, the Metro organization, Sasha Vinny, Philip Mann, and all the fans that made this happen. Thank you very much.
Ben Dover's English Escapage HK Video VCA. Bottom Dweller 5, Elegant Angel Productions. Buttman's Bend Over Babes 4, Evil Angel Productions. Buttman in Barcelona, Evil Angel Productions. Drop Sex, Wipe the Floor, John Leslie Productions, Evil Angel. New Wave Hookers 5, VCA Platinum Plus. The Pyramid 3, Private USA. Rocco's Private Fantasies, Rocco Siffredi, Evil Angel. Seder Wicked Productions. Seymour Butts, Gluteus to the Maximus, Seymour Incorporated. Savelle, Cal Vista Films, Metro. And the winner,
Is...
New Wave Hookers number 5 from DJ Platinum Plus.
Thank Michael Min, Janie Hamilton, and all the other great people at DCA. Julie, you all did a great job. Thanks a lot.
But the Freudian in me was saying, turn it on. Turn it on. Because to name it is to claim it. To name it is to take away its power. So instead of going, Freud, Christian Science. Freud, Christian Science. Uncircumcised males. 50% chance. HIV positive female. And I'm pacing around the table, and I'm sweating, and I'm barking, and my mouth is dry, and I've got the book open, and I know, and it's there, it's there. I know what I have to write. It's right there. It's not something I have to make up. It's a memory, and all I have to sit down and do is sit down and write that memory. It's the summer of 1966, and I'm there, home with my mother, trying to help her through that nervous breakdown. And she is there that summer day. I remember tearing her hair, tearing it out, and singing certain Christian Science hymns out of tune and crying out to Jesus. And I'm trying to calm her down by reading to her from Alan Watts' book, Psychotherapy, East and West. Laboring under that romantic R.D. Lang idea that everyone who has a nervous breakdown is so lucky.
thank Michael Ninn, Jamie Hamilton, and all the other great people at BCA, Julie.
He's home. Beautiful day, isn't it?
Hi, I'm not here right now. Leave a message if you want to. If you don't, then don't. I couldn't give a shit.
What a message. Okay, John Sims, looks like you're not home. But anyway, we'll leave the clock ticking because you've still got a chance to take part in our lunchtime Swing City giveaway. John, if you're there, pick up the phone because you're set to take part in Summer City's 2SUK Swing City Challenge, where you could take home $1,000 worth of vouchers from Major Mufti's Giant Burger Bunker and also a new supply of cleaning products from our very good friends at Turnoff. Is John?
Yes, he's there.
I was convinced John would be out there for the moment. Oh, Mrs. Jack, and there goes the phone. 1, 4, 3, get to the phone, John.
Hello?
Eastern Montana, did you find a lot of abandoned homes and abandoned little towns?
Drive a locomotive fast enough through the landscape, some kind of electromagnetic something or other takes place in the atmosphere, and rain clouds miraculously form over the passing train in the landscape.
Man,
This is Hollywood.
Let me at him. How the hell are you? Good trip? My name is Jack Lipnick. I run this stop. And I'm from New York myself. Minsk, if you want to go all the way back. The writer is king here at Capitol Pictures. You don't believe me? Take a look at your paycheck at the end of every week. That's what we think of the writer. So what kind of pictures does he like?
Mr. Pink hasn't given a preference, Mr. Lipnick.
So how about it, Bart?
Well, to be honest, I don't go to the pictures much, Mr. Lipnick.
That's okay. That's okay. That's okay. That's just fine. You probably walked in here thinking that was going to be a handicap, thinking that we wanted people who knew something about the media, maybe even thinking there was all kinds of technical mumbo-jumbo to learn. You would... We're only interested in one thing. Can you tell a story, Bart? Can you make us laugh? Can you make us cry? Can you make us want to break out? Enjoy a song. Is that more than one thing? Okay. The point is, I run this dump, and I don't know the detective mumbo-jumbo. Why do I run it? Because I got horse sense, goddammit. Showmanship. And also, and I hope I told you this, I am bigger and meaner and louder than any other kike in this town. Did you tell him that, Lou? And I don't mean my dick is bigger than yours. It's not a sexual thing, although you're a writer. You know more about that. Coffee?
There's a very romantic notion that Hollywood movies were made by artists. The director and the writer and, to a certain extent, the stars actually made these movies. Those were the real artists, and these guys were only businessmen. I would place the artistic sensibility not with the director, but with the studio head. And for those who say, well, this is ridiculous, I would say, from beginning to end, the executive had the primary input into the picture and supervised every aspect of production, over and above the fact that beyond any individual picture, it was the executive who created the entire studio apparatus. Every producer who worked there, every director who worked there, every writer who worked there, and every star who worked there was part of the larger system that was created by the Hollywood Jews.
And I saw everything Kazan did, and that led me to Strasberg, and then I learned a lot from him about the very thing I wanted to learn. What? How to be in the course of your life, during the course of performing a play. There are two great definitions of directing, Strasberg's and Kazan's. Strasberg's, as you probably know, is that the director creates the events of the play. And Kazan's is that the director turns psychology into behavior.
Are these people? I look through photos with my mom of our first summer in Maine. We seem so optimistic and playful in these pictures. Our family before the fall. Mom and Dad are young, good-looking, working on the building site together. Emilio and I eat breakfast outside the tent and help hammer nails. There's one of us posing proudly in front of our new outhouse.
I remember one time, this great time, when I was working on cutting the swath through the brush to put the road in, and it was raining and had been raining and raining for days, and things had gotten pretty muddy, and you kids were completely naked, and you were sliding around in the mud and covered with mud, and I had wanted somebody to come up to look at the possibility of doing a foundation for us, and he happened to arrive just as you kids came sliding down through the mud. He'd driven as far as he could up in his truck and got out to walk. And so he's confronted first with the wet, muddy little kids screaming and laughing, and they went running past them down the path. And then I came out. Yeah, and I came out wearing, like, shorts and no shirt, holding my machete, and covered with, like, little bits of leaves, because, like, when I'd be chopping things up with the machete, like, leaves would be flying all over the place, and I was wet, so they were stuck to me all over my body and my face. I had little pieces of leaves. He looked a little startled.
I couldn't have been happier. If Dad's dream was to have a project of his own, I had my own 6-year-old dream. Little house on the prairie.
Wow, I think the guy who wrote that tried to sell me a car once.
I think he sold me one, actually.
Well, you found something called Campbell's Soil Culture Manual. Why don't you describe that?
Oh, that was the Bible of the dry farming movement. And every settler, you know, there were probably three books in these people's claim shacks when they started out. One would be the Bible, one would be Pilgrim's Progress, and one would be Campbell's Soil Culture Manual of 1907. Campbell was this Scottish Presbyterian who had an experimental farm in Nebraska, from where he promulgated his wonderful theories about, and they were a mixture of science and Calvinism, really, how you could turn the driest land into a reservoir of water which would see you through the dry years if you managed to Calvinistically hoard and save every single drop of rain that fell whenever rain did fall.
I know that's what you always said.
I wear clothes to conceal it. I mean, I have this jacket on because I don't want you to see my fat arms.
Not long ago, I took an LSD trip. And I threw up for 8 hours straight. And you know what? I finally threw up Nancy.
Oh, my God. I just can't.
I know.
I can't understand this. I just can't fathom it.
I know it's hard. It's my problem, too. I'm not blaming you.
I know.
I'm just saying it's something that I couldn't talk to you about.
Does that mean I was so unaware?
Men think that I'm crazy because I'm obsessed with my weight and that I am always very particular about what I eat.
So
I think I was so secret.
Every time that I open the refrigerator, I think, what are you going to eat? You're not going to eat again, are you? You better be careful. Are you eating that much?
And those two definitions, as they broke down into their specifics, became more and more fascinating to me. And I didn't know what I was going to do. I mean, I knew I wasn't going to act because who would hire me? It hadn't occurred to me to direct. I just liked thinking about it and learning about it.
What took you back to Chicago from the Strasburg years?
Well, I couldn't make a living of any kind. And Paul Sills, by that time, together with Elaine and a few other people, had started Compass in Chicago, which was a cabaret. And he said, why don't you come back and work with us? And it offered a luxurious $28 a week. So I went back.
In speaking of the compass, you've used a very Stanislavskian term. You've spoken of learning to find the spine of a seed.
Well, When you're making up a scene for people who've got a lot of beers in their hands, you learn in a painful and memorable way what an audience expects. The first thing, I mean, this coming at you without a word from them is the unspoken, why are you telling me this? It's very powerful.
Yes.
And you better have a good answer. And now, interestingly, because it's funny, is a good answer. But if that isn't your answer, get another one and make sure it's strong and clear, or you're going to be this schmuck sitting up there trying to think of the next line.
Glazed ham with cloves sticking out of it, and a hot canned fruit compote. Mom! And then we'd sit around the piano, my mother in a beautiful burgundy velveteen dress, my father with his sleeves rolled up, smoking a pipe, his golden lap at his side, and we'd sing Christmas carols.
Oh, Tannenbaum, oh, Tannenbaum,
Chip would harmonize.
Tannenbaum, oh, Tannenbaum.
And then we'd get ready for midnight church services. We'd sit together, our arms around each other in the pew. My father would donate 10% of his income as they passed the basket by. So proud to be a part of Christian society. Back home, I remove what little makeup I need to wear with Clinique products and slip into a flannel Lands nightgown. Laying in bed, wrapping the comforter around myself, staring out at the snowfall, dreaming of all the Christmases past and all the Christmases to come when I'd have a family of my own. And like every Christmas Eve, Chip would come in. Oh God, Chip, you are so cute. I wish you weren't my brother so I could fuck you. Honey, I bought you the coolest Christmas presents. You're gonna die. It is so neat. Chip, what's wrong? You seem sad. It's Christmas. I don't know, babe. It's my last year of high school. I want to do really good on the SAT so I can get into a great college and play football. I'm kind of worried Mom and Dad might break up. Oh, honey, that's not going to happen. You're too sensitive. Sally, is that you outside that door, you little butthole? If it is you, I will kill you and you won't get your Christmas present. Oh, God, I hate her. Ah, she's all right, babe. She's just a little girl. Mom comes in a robe and furry slippers. What are you two kids up to? I'm so darn proud of the two of you. Babe, tonight in church in that Laura Ashley dress, you were magnificent. And thanks for helping me in the kitchen. Don't know what I'd do without you, kitten. Chip, you've turned into such a fine young man, but what is with that hung dog look on your face tonight, mister? I don't know, Mom. I'm just worried you and Dad might get divorced. Oh, no, no, no. Not us. Not the Jensens. We're not going anywhere.
These transports would arrive on a daily basis on the railway lines at Birkenau. Here, those left alive would be unloaded.
I don't know what time it was. It was light. The train stops. You hear hobnail running. It must have been the SS, Gestapo. And the doors are opening up. And they shout to us, aussteigen. Out, out. Quick, quick, quick.
I saw a group of SS men standing here, or walking about. The railway trucks were there too. And it took some time for people to get out of the trucks. And then people were grouped into two lines. One was for men, the other was for women with children.
They shout men and women to separate. Men one column, women on the other column. And we formed like a five row. So my sister and I and my three friends, we stood like in fives.
First, the men moved on slowly before the SS man, who stood about here somewhere. They came before him, one after the other, and he waved his glove one way or the other. Those on that side went to that crematorium. The others stood waiting, having been detailed for work.
And I was trying to help my mother through to the other side, but she wasn't listening to me. She was reading from Mary Baker Eddy's Science and Health, and also from the Christian Science Monitor. And there, I remember that warm July day, she curled up on the couch in her pajamas with the Christian Science Monitor between us like a Japanese paper wall. And I was so annoyed that I couldn't get through that paper to her that I just reached down and flicked it like this. And she pulled the paper down and looked me right in the eyes and said, "How shall I do it, dear? How shall I do it? Shall I do it in the garage with the car?" And I'm sitting there at that table with the book open and that California sun coming across me, lighting up every spot, every imperfection, every crevice, every... Renee? Renee, look, come here a minute. Would you come in and bring the magnifying glass? This is not, it's not a freckle. I know this time. Is this a blue? Now that you're in here, look at the back of my tongue. Is that? It's white? I got the white back. Well, look all the way in the back. Look, but these are cheekbones, aren't they? Am I losing weight? It's a skull, isn't it? Now tell me, I did not have cheekbones yesterday. It's fall, I can't do it. I cannot do this. I cannot write a film script and nurse you at the same time. You've either got to shut up or go get tested.
Make a list. You have too many things. Get your priorities straight. Do you want to do this HBO Flying Saucer project?
So we decide to research the flying saucers. And I have to tell you, this research did take my mind off death and dying for a bit. We go down to the Hollywood Flatlands to a group called Skywatch, which is basically a consciousness-raising group for people who have just been taken aboard flying saucers. And we get down there, and it's in the Flatlands. It's a kind of Hollywood bungalow, a little fire in the fireplace, about 25 metal folding chairs. They're pretty filled. We all find our seats and sit down. Now, at the end of the living room, there are about six people who have just been taken aboard spaceships, and they are testifying for the first time, and they're very vulnerable.
Which was very interesting to me. I got a big kick out of it.
If you had to name, I mean, I know you don't want to leave somebody out. Who's influenced you the most, filmmakers? You said Howard Hawks.
Yeah, Howard Hawks is a gigantic influence.
Because?
He is the single, as far as, for my money, he is the single greatest storyteller, all right, in the history of cinema.
Glover at WZCBC.
And all light it up like that, too. You see, boys forget what their country means by just reading the land of the free and history books. When they get to be men, they forget even more. Liberty is too precious a thing to be buried in books, Miss Saunders. Men should hold it up in front of them every single day of their lives and say, I'm free to think and to speak. My ancestors couldn't, I can. And my children.
The Jewish determination to survive was repackaged as the will of all common people to go on.
We sure taken a beating.
I know. That's what makes us tough. Rich fellas come up and they die, and their kids ain't no good and they die out. But we keep a coming. We're the people that live. They can't wipe us out, they can't lick us. We'll go on forever, Pa, because we're the people.
Hello, this is Crispin Glover.
Gave up the commercial art and stayed with the saxophone.
It went from one to another.
One thing led to another, yeah.
Well, rather over a period of time there, yeah. In the 60s, but Presley influenced you, Little Richard
very much so. Presley, because I think he was just such an indomitable spirit of music in his early days, and it was reckless, and it was really quite a rebellion that he cast upon America and the whole of Western society, really. Single-handedly, white, the white West, anyway.
That turned out to be fantastically useful and educational, that pressure. Because it teaches you, slowly, it teaches you what a scene is. It teaches you that if we're doing an improvisation and you say black, I better say white.
Back to Aristotle. Conflict.
Exactly. create a conflict as soon as you can. Elaine had a motto, when in doubt, seduce.
And probably the single most entertaining filmmaker in the history of cinema.
You understand? Stay out.
You're scared of room 237, ain't you?
No, I
No, no, we don't know. If it's degraded, you don't know whose blood it is. Remember that Dr. Henry Lee supported the defense theory. Remember also that part of the defense theory was that in opening up the tube, some of it may have sprayed. And remember the defense theory was that Yamauchi may not have been telling the whole truth. But I want to throw something back at you if I can, Vince. I want to compare the evidence against Simpson, which you very masterfully put in your book, with the evidence that I have in my book against
his packer, his patent plows and harrows and discs, and he believed in capillary attraction as being the great force that could be harnessed by the homesteader to make his dry land moist. And that too didn't really amount to much as science, but it was science's miracle, which so much of the settler's science was. Science believed in as a kind of religion that if you could understand the scientific principles of something like capillary attraction, you'd be saved and the desert could be made to bloom and turn into a garden.
Unlike Edison, the moguls celebrated the working class while extolling middle-class values.
It's Andy Harding.
What's this all about?
The moguls created a fantasy version of their own lives. They created an America where families were strong. The flight from persecution had destroyed their own families. The movies showed the family as indomitable and treated mothers with reverence. The immigrant Jews also appealed to the aspirations of youth, another group of perennial outsiders forced to prove itself.
George Washington was just a kid when he chopped down that tree, but if they'd locked him up for that, where'd this country be?
They call us babes in arms. They think they must direct us. But if we're babes in arms, we'll make them all respect us. Why have we got our arms?
was a mythical America, a world of boundless optimism, happy endings, and homespun truths. This was a world of clapboard houses with broad verandas and white picket fences, gleaming streets and shops with friendly picture windows.
Yeah, it's in his mind since 1985 to make the big score. And so Rokar severely impeaches Furman about these photographs. And once again, these photographs speak a thousand words.
Little Richard and Fats Domino, of course, the early rockers. And then into things like John Lee Hooker and... And also, by the 60s, I fell in love with a band called the Velvet Underground. And I think they sort of sorted me out the kind of music that I wanted to write. Not really like them, but I took the tip from them, anyway.
You were going from one band to another. I mean, I've never seen such a list of bands that you were associated with.
Yeah, a weaker band,
A weaker band.
Yeah.
Yeah. All going to do what? I mean, just to be a musician and to...
Yeah, I couldn't make... I mean, I wasn't very resolute about the idea of being a singer. I played saxophone. I wanted to do that, but a singer was beaten up one night, and so I took over the vocals, and it went down okay. And so I stayed on as singer, and then I got disenchanted with the songs that we were doing. I wanted us to write our own, and they didn't want to write songs. So I got thrown out of the band, and then, you know, it was all those kinds of changes.
When was
it's fairly sort of, it was really, that's a pretty stereotypical beginnings for any person out of England, I think.
How did this...
But the interesting thing is the percentage of people in rock music that in fact have some kind of art background compared to American bands. A lot of American bands often come from a different kind of background. It's often a... It's very often a blue-collar kind of background.
Right.
And they're probably brought up in more industrial towns, and they're...
Like Springsteen in New Jersey.
Is a typical example. I think in Britain, there was really a penchant for anybody studying... Oh, you went to art school to learn how to play the guitar better, it seems to me.
America was made up of citizens who were industrious, religious, wholesome, and decent. And although they were of different classes and ethnicities, they were knitted together by a larger, almost spiritual sense of family. The moguls created the images, the icons, and the visual forms that we identify with the American way of life.
They created their own America, an America which is not the real America. It's their own version of the real America. But ultimately, this shadow America becomes so popular and so widely disseminated that its images and its values come to devour the real America. And so the grand irony of all of Hollywood is that Americans come to define themselves by the shadow America that was created by Eastern European Jewish immigrants who weren't admitted to the precincts of the real America.
He said on cross-examination that the photograph pointing
afterglow was taken at least 40 minutes before daylight. Los Angeles' worst nightmare, but America's worst nightmare. Dynamite.
acting everywhere and made him one of the richest men in the world. One night, he was awakened by a sore cut on his finger. He dressed it with a protective film of nitrated cotton, a preparation called Nu Skin. This gave him the idea of mixing a similar solution with nitroglycerin. The result was blasting gelatin, which retained the power of nitroglycerin and was as safe as dynamite. Blasting gel is still used today.
The creation of verbal environments that certain poets are doing, where the reader's linguistic responses to certain stimuli become the poem, the act of making them becomes the poem.
Us over. Ben shook his head and walked over to one of the armed men. Keep them here until this is over. All we need is another hour. If they try to escape, shoot them. The operative spoke briefly to the other three, and they formed a perimeter, encircling us at a distance of about 30 feet. Sit down, one of them said in a foreign accent. We sat facing each other in the darkness, our energy almost totally deflated. There had been no signs of the soul groups since we left the cave. What do you think we should do? I asked Charlene. Nothing's changed, she whispered. We've got to build our energy again. The darkness was almost total, broken only by the operative's lights sweeping back and forth across the group. I could barely make out the outlines of the others' faces, even though we were sitting in a tight circle, 8 feet apart.
We have to try to escape,
Curtis whispered.
I think they will kill us.
Suddenly I remembered the image I'd seen in Feynman's birth vision. He envisioned being with us in the woods, in the dark. I knew there was also another landmark in the scene, but I couldn't remember what it was.
No,
I said. I think we need to try again, here. At that moment, the air was filled with a high-pitched sound, a sound similar to the hum, but again, more in harmony, almost pleasing to the ear. Again, a perceptible shimmer swept through the ground under our bodies.
We have to increase our energy now,
Maya whispered. I don't know if I can do it here, Curtis responded.
You have to,
I said.
Focus on each other the way we did before,
Maya added. I tried to screen out the ominous scene around us and return to an inner state of love. Ignoring the shadows and the flickering beams of light, I focused on the beauty of the faces in the circle. As I struggled to locate the others' higher self-expression, I began to notice a shift in the light pattern around us. Gradually, I could see every face and expression very clearly, as though I was looking through an infrared viewer.
What do we visualize?
Curtis asked in desperation. We have to get back to our birth visions, Maya said.
Remember why we came.
Suddenly, the ground shook violently, and the sound from the experiment again took on a dissonant, grating quality.
We've got to visualize stopping them, Curtis said.
We moved closer together, and our collective thoughts seemed to project the image of fighting back. We knew that somehow we could marshal our forces and push back the negative and destructive attempts of the experiment. I even picked up a picture of Feynman being pushed backwards, his equipment blowing up and burning, his men fleeing in terror. Another surge in the noise disrupted my focus. The experiment was continuing. 50 feet away, a huge pine tree snapped in half and thundered to the ground. With a ripping sound and a cloud of dust, a fissure 5 feet wide opened up between us and the guard on the right. He reeled back in horror, the beam of his flashlight swinging wild in the night.
This isn't working, Maya screamed.
Another tree crashed to the earth on our left as the earth slid 4 or 5 feet, knocking us flat to the ground. Maya looked horrified and jumped to her feet.
I've got to get away from here, she yelled,
then began to run north into the darkness. The guard on that side, lying flat where he had been thrown by the earth's movement, rolled to his knees and caught her form in the beam of his flashlight, then raised his gun.
No! Wait!
I screamed. As she ran, Maya looked back, spotting the guard who was now aiming directly at her, preparing to fire at point-blank range. The scene seemed to shift into slow motion, and as the gun discharged, every line in her face revealed an awareness that she was about to die. But instead of the bullets ripping into her side and back, a wisp of white light darted in front of her, and the bullets bore no effect. She hesitated momentarily, then disappeared into the darkness. At the same time, sensing the opportunity, Charlene leaped up from her position to my right and ran to the northeast into the dust, her movement totally unnoticed by the guards. I started to run, but the guard who had fired at Maya turned his weapon toward me. Quickly, Curtis reached out and grabbed my legs, dragging me to the ground. Gradually, the noise began to diminish, and the earth's movement slowed to mere tremors.
For God's sake, Curtis yelled toward him, you've got to stop this now!
It seems to me that there's a whole area of found, not just found material, but found experiences that are inherent in language itself that poets could explore. But I want to get to the meaning in which you meant it. There are a number of distinguishing qualities about actual found or pop poetry, which I think make it hard to compare it to this stream which does go right through poetry of finding poems in the fields, that kind of thing. One of them, of course, is that for pop poems are not referential in that there are no reference. If you think of a Williams poem, you're involved with the whole question of the two meanings of poetic. Do we mean by poetic a certain use of language, or do we mean a certain experience that the language presents? That
good motto. Oh, you're better off if you're a man and a woman on stage, but still, it's a very good motto.
Do you think that Nichols and May had an influence on their time, speaking of them in the third person?
I'm the last to know. You know, we were so startled that all this happened for Nichols and May, because we thought it was what we were going to do till we grew up and started our real grown-up jobs, whatever they would turn out to be.
It changed comedy. It changed everybody. And everybody who came after was influenced by it. And they did it in these extended conversational arcs that have influenced both the writing and speaking of humor from that day to this. And you'll see it over and over again if you watch Mike's movies.
Great, we have a combination of advertising hype and pseudoscience.
At that time, and I can remember a magazine out of Detroit, even before the great punk magazine, called Cream.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And
Lester Bangs.
I tell you, that magazine was very influential in, I think, just shaping the whole punk thing, and they had some great writers. I just want to put my 2 seconds in for Lester Bangs, who was...
Yeah.
All right.
You know, he's in the book. He's in the book.
Dying is one of the best books. Plus, your book is fantastic as well.
Have you read it? You have it?
By Dichotic Reactions carburetor, Doug?
No, I'm sorry?
Please kill me.
No, I haven't, but I will read it. I swear to God, because I was a subscriber to punk. I used to send money to you guys in New York.
Many of us ended up in rock bands, and I think that gave English rock its kind of character. It gave it the strange quirkiness that it has. I mean, for sure, mine draws on not just rock but vaudeville and avant-garde. You know, it can wear a red nose and sort of take its clothes off at the same time.
This notion of you as an iconoclast, this sense of always striking out to sort of, as we say, push the edges of the envelope, where does that come from?
I'm not sure if it's iconoclastic. I think my ideal more is a synthesis rather than anything else. I quite and have always liked the idea of the cybernetics of our culture, the way that you can draw several strands together and create a new thing. I hope and believe that it's that what I do is more of a creative thing in that way.
up where the clouds are far behind. Bubbles melt like lemon drops away above the chimney tops. That's where you
In the 1920s and 30s, movie houses became temples of the new Hollywood religion. Jewish values made kitsch. 75% of all Americans went to the movies at least once a week.
This kind of movie going was religious because it had to do with worship. It had to do with the screen being larger than you were, and you being in awe of what you were looking at and feeling a certain reverence for it.
13 live births, but only 11 children lived to adulthood.
Do you know what they died of? Do you know any of the circumstances?
No, I don't.
Why don't you ask your father?
Tell me why.
I don't want to talk about it.
Tell me why you don't want to talk about it.
I want to know the next question, and that's it. That's it. Well, the interview will be over.
Is it something?
The interview is going to be over soon.
Why are you doing this?
I'm telling you.
Why?
I'm telling you.
Why?
It proves nothing, and it means nothing. You're talking about something I know nothing about. I don't remember witnessing and nothing.
Don't push me. All right, I'm going to push. Let it go.
By the way, I was just curious. What's your parents' wedding anniversary?
Never knew it.
They were married more than 50 years.
I never knew it.
You never went to a wedding anniversary party of your own parents?
You can't jog my memory because I never knew it.
How about your birthday? What's your date of birth?
November 1st.
What year?
1919.
Well, get ready for this. The 1920 census says quite precisely that in 1920 you were 2 7/12 years old.
So what do you want me to do?
You might actually be older than you think you are.
Well, I'd rather be younger. But actually, at this point in my life, it doesn't make a damn bit of difference.
Do you remember your mother's birthday?
I can't remember because I never knew it.
I know my mother's birthday.
Alan, what does that prove? It proves nothing.
How about your father's birthday?
I have no idea.
Never knew.
Never knew. We never talk about birthdays. We never celebrated birthdays. They came and they went. Nobody paid attention to it. We were in the throes of a depression, and things were tight and tough. In all my years, I can't remember once, except maybe from my bar mitzvah, I don't remember any birthdays at all.
And so there was, maybe you could say, a bogus spirituality, but it was a spirituality still that was believed in.
Star Norma Shearer, legendary producer Irving Thalberg, and the most famous of screen lovers, Greta Garbo and John Gilbert.
And here actors became the gods and goddesses of the new American religion.
Innovation, getting cheerfully mobbed. It's frenzied friendship, frantic fandom. Here she comes, the star.
And where there are new gods, there must be new idols. So the studio heads began a movie guild with a lofty title of the Academy of Motion Picture Arts and Sciences. It was Mayer's brilliant idea to create the Oscars, where the movie moguls could honor themselves by giving each other awards. In this way, they went from being a group of immigrant Jews to award-winning American producers.
What are we going to do now?
I want to look at some of the Army pictures.
Yeah, I was served in the Army. Big deal. 11 million men served in the Army. You could make me a big hero. Maybe I won the war by myself. I came to Japan a matter of days after the dropping of the atom bomb. And all the time I was in Japan for almost a year, I was never into a Jap home.
It's Japanese. Don't say Jap.
We call it my name. Well, you see, it's hard for me to discuss it with you because I was a soldier with the conquering army, and these were the fucking enemy, and you're telling me to treat it with kid gloves. You don't ever think of them as the perpetrators of Pearl Harbor. How that son of a bitches did to us at Pearl Harbor while they were talking peace in Washington. You never think about that.
We punished them for that terribly. I'm just saying truth.
And I want to tell you something. You will not now, not ever, get me to approach Japanese the way you do.
You were champions. It's a championship team.
This group was part of my life. I can relate to them. I've forgotten a lot of their names, but I can relate to them.
You can relate to your army buddies more than you can relate to your own grandparents?
Yes. Absolutely. No question about it.
Get it organized and go to an agent, and I'd like to thank her for that.
Something happened.
I know. I have 6 children, but I have 5 here today. Seth's 11 years old. He just filmed a Dr. Pepper commercial yesterday, and he has several commercials airing right now on TV. And then Tyler has a Chevrolet commercial that'll be airing on TV for 13 weeks. And then Micah, he just shot 2 Nintendo commercials a couple of weeks ago, and those will be airing in September. And he's done quite a lot of commercials himself.
Being here as much as possible is one of the things you have to do, too. You have to come and be here and go on every single audition, no matter what. And you have to just be available constantly, and you have to let your agent know that you are and that you're very interested and that your child, you know, really wants to do this. Otherwise, they won't send you out.
Kathy Hardy is a single mother with high hopes for her 9-year-old daughter, Trisha Lee. Children love to be the center of attention. Do what the adults say, and you get all the attention you want.
Smaller smile.
And relax your shoulders.
Not that serious.
There
you go. You can let it go now. Gotta have it. Come on. Here, put your arms out. Come on. She can't see the back. If I say put your arm out. Come on. Look, if you do this. See? Did they drop?
No.
No?
We can't see it at all.
No?
You know why? It's just because your top covers.
Your top has a couple layers.
Okay.
Good. Perfect.
Do that again. That was cute.
Can we have that again, please?
That's cute.
Come on.
Let's look at this and see if we're in the realm.
Well, you got away from the shoe.
Arms out.
Silly face. That's it.
This is Crispin Glover at WZCBC.
chemical or hormonal imbalance, a fist of facts, or just a plain good old flagrant disregard for the outdated and inhibitional so-called code of ethics, the thin line which separates the animal from the vegetable is obliterated, leaving them free to intoxicate their need for the lowest common denominator. The mating of brute ignorance and a sheer force of will enable them to meet and greet any danger, no matter how devastating the consequence. In order to fuel that necessary agitation which feeds their entire existence. Without this stimulating intoxicant, the banality of their boring and stupid, dull, miserable, good-for-nothing lives becomes too chronic and depressing, a constant.
And as we approach the front to these SS and Gestapo, and they stand like this with his finger like you this way. I'm here like to walk, like I'm towards you, and he's standing. Second, I didn't turn around.
Mainly young people.
And we're all walking, and I'm taking for granted that my mama is following with my little brother.
Only through the threat of constant danger or the imprisonment of incomprehensible pain can they find a suitable distraction to veer them away from this dull reality which they try so desperately to escape.
Five roads. So my sister and I and my three friends, we stood like in fives.
First, the men moved on slowly before the SS man, who stood about here somewhere. They came before him, one after the other, and he waved his glove one way or the other. Those on that side went to that crematorium. The others stood waiting, having been detailed for work. Those were mainly young people.
Well, sometimes they can see things that happened a long time ago. I think a lot of things happened right here in this particular hotel over the years.
And we're all walking. And I'm taking for granted that my mama is following with my little brother. And as we approach the front to these SS and Gestapo, and they stand like this with his finger, like you this way, I'm here like to walk, like I'm towards you. And he's standing there and he's going like this. And us five girls, this to this gate, and other people going to through this gate. And for a slight second, I didn't turn around. I'm taking for granted my mama's following me. But as I turned around to see where she's coming, she'd already gone. So from that day on, that was 1944, very early September or so, I haven't seen my mother alive and my little brother.
And not all of them was good.
What about room 237?
Room 237?
You're scared of room 237, ain't you?
No, I ain't.
Mr. Allen, what is in room 237?
The reality that every stinking, boring, useless, unnecessary day of the rest of your miserable, goddamn, useless, stupid, and pathetic life is going to be spent struggling to survive and afford that rotten, useless, no good for nothing next day.
Nothing. There ain't nothing in room 237. But you ain't got no business going in there anyway. So stay out.
To be able to afford the rent, the gas bills, the phone bills, the speeding tickets, to live by the rules, the regulations.
Above all, follow regs as per official order. Some such thing. Just a storyline, a fiction, a fixation of some kind. So do not quarrel, just talk amongst yourselves. And at least appear as though all things are normal and confidence is high. Here at the Strategic Air Defense Command, Cheyenne Mountain, in the heart of Newton, deep underground in the virtually empty command post here, ZBC Central. Coordinating the command and control strategies, ONI regs, as per 1996, still in effect, enforced by this command and, you might say, softened and persuaded by this broadcast radio orifice. Gary Geiserman, at your command, assuaging and persuading you. All is well in the kingdom. Show up for work and kiss your loved ones as though all is well. And all shall be well. Here at 90.3 at least, That's our game plan. Good Americans that we are. Perpendicular to Boston College over here. You know, realism with a slight torque. Running up the flagpole and full moon that sucker. As per regs, I repeat. The Gary Geiserman digital reconstruction tonight, reconstructed from previous shows, broadcasting being such hard work as it is, a Wizard of Oz kind of cover. You know, here in America, the land where everyone wears a mask. Cover. Like duck and cover, as it were. Going till 2 o'clock. A new metaphysics conversion. A convergence
of sub-synergistic elements attracted into a congealed mass for your consumption and contortion here in the land of the brave and the free, and the free and the brave. Launching platform of the next millennium consciousness paradigm shift. At least that's the storyline as I speak, according to the 1996 program paper. Plot and fiction of the Northeast Quadrant. We'll return now to the Late Late Show, Jews in the Wood, Part 2, and an enticing tale it is. Back in days of yonder Americanischer lore. And proud to be.
They all turn their heads and try to cover for him.
But I think it's fine to draw from opera or from the visual arts, from the underground, from mainstream, and just produce a new blend, which is probably a more complete way of describing the way that we live, and creating a sense of the cultural spin by amalgamating all these different threads.
It's so funny because when you get into I mean, when you're talking about people who've, like, you know, worked for 30 years and they have, like, you know, 25, 30, 40 films to show for it, you know, the old guys, the pioneers. Yeah. All right, when you go through their films and everything like that, you know, you're looking at this film and like, you know, I never saw this one, and I never saw this one, but I really want to. And then, like, you start seeing some of their later works or some, like, early minor work that you'd always heard about but never saw it. You always are more or less kind of disappointed. It's like, you know, that's okay. It's good to see it so I can say I saw it and everything. Howard Hawks, except for one movie, never disappointed me. All right. It's like, you know, it's like even like his, you know, even the ones that didn't get any credit whatsoever, like the ones he did later in his life, like something like Man's Favorite Sport, which is just basically this like kind of crazy paraphrased remake of Bringing Up Baby, is funny. Is it good as Bringing Up Baby? No, but it's like really good. It's really funny. Now, if I'm going to watch Bringing Up Baby or Man's Favorite Sport, I'll watch Bringing Up Baby. But if Man's Favorite Sport's on TV, I'll watch it in 2 seconds. If it's playing at the theaters, I'll go see it.
Well, I don't know how anybody can possibly know this. But I like to come back to this question of wonder tissue. I mean, the fact is, in physics, of course, they're dealing with wonder tissue all the time, because ordinary matter behaves in very counterintuitive ways when you look at it carefully. Not at all like electronic computers.
The laws to meet the curfews, the deadlines to stand in the bread lines, the phone lines, the cons, the rip-offs, that's what we're talking about.
Thank you, Mr. Jessel. I'm proud to be the recipient of this award. I'm proud to be the head of a studio.
Lydia Lunchwise, the bullshit rap, babe. You know all about it. That's why you're here.
Dad, yeah, just a little message because, well, I guess you haven't heard from me in what seems like a goddamn coon's age, right?
In their own lives, the Hollywood Jews subscribed to the religion of their own making. They were the quintessential little guys who had made it to the top. They threw parties on their yachts. They dressed in tailor-made suits. They lived in the kind of houses that aristocrats were supposed to live in. And when they were not admitted to the Gentile country clubs, they rebuilt this one, Hillcrest, bigger and better than all the rest. The moguls divorced their Jewish first wives and married Gentiles, younger, more socially acceptable women.
The whole notion that Hollywood pins itself on is intermarriage. The whole idea of inter-ethnic romance. Now, why do they do that? First of all, because love is a very democratic ideal. It knows no borders, it knows not riches, it knows not tradition, it knows simply the matters of the heart. In addition to that, when a Jew can marry a non-Jew, particularly part of the establishment culture, that's really a wonderful indication of how far up into society Jews have come.
Now, this is where a producer lives. Not just any producer, but one of the most famous of them all. Samuel Goldwyn, high up on one of Beverly's hills.
Good morning.
Well, here is Mr. and Mrs. Samuel Goldwyn. And do you mind if I call you Francis and
I'd
Sam?
I'd like that very much.
Sam, I understand that while you're the boss in the studio, that there's another...
This is the boss here.
It's her house, isn't it?
Every bit of it.
Let's talk to Francis then. How long have you lived here?
Oh, it's so long. 25, 26 years.
Sam, how'd you happen to pick this hilltop site out? Because of the view?
She picked it out.
And you bought it?
She liked it. The idea is to have her like it. That's all that's necessary for me.
It's fun to live in Beverly, isn't it?
We like Beverly very much.
And we're delighted you're both citizens of our town.
Yes, I'm okay. I'm sure I'm eating all right and everything. No, I do not have a steady boyfriend. Why the hell would I want that? And we have some action. It's just too much. I'm pretty excited. I'm going to be able to get a little bit more. I'm going to be able to get a little bit more. I'm going to be always doing something. Always doing something. But all of a sudden, you took me over here. Now I must have been about 13 or 14 by now and started wailing the shit out of me. Really wailing out of my ass right with the bottom of your shoe. No soft shoe here either. No, sorry. And I'm screaming, Ma! Ma, he's killing me! He's killing me! And she...
And stay out. Room 337. But you ain't got no business going in there anyway. So stay out. You understand? Stay out.
Ran all the way up the stairs, tripping halfway up and yelling, "Lanny! Lanny, what the hell are you doing to her?" And she said, "Shut the fuck up, she just get what she deserves, right?" And I say, "Yeah, you always get what you deserve, but..."
Okay,
thanks. Well done, there, buddy. Yeah, I'll take that. Okay. Thank you. Nice to meet you, too. Thank you so much. Yep. Martin Sheen, who came to Hollywood from the New York stage, had no ambitious family driving him. His four children, including Emilio Estevez and Charlie Sheen, have all followed him into show business.
I grew up in a very large family in the Midwest. Both my parents were immigrants, and there was no connection at all to show business. And so I had this feeling deep inside of me that I had no words, no ability to identify. I knew it was something, but I didn't know what. It was only when I started... for a while, but I'm one of them. I belong to that community. Okay, everything's fine. Well, you know, my mother died when I was still a kid, but my dad thought I was nuts, of course, and would not support me. He wanted me to go to college, and we always had our battles. So as soon as I got out of high school, I said, "Look, you know, I got to go to New York." And he never blessed me until I actually left and did it. And as soon as I got off on my own in New York, then he blessed me and said, "Whatever I can do to help you."
And so you didn't discourage your kids, and you didn't encourage.
No, I didn't. And the last thing I thought that they would want to become involved in was what I did, you know. I was really surprised by that.
When did they come to you, and then did you say,
They started in high school. Emilio was doing stuff in high school that I didn't know about. And one day he said, "Would you guys like to come and see a play I wrote?" And I'm happened to be playing in it as well. I said, "How long have you been doing this?" He said, "Well, I've been interested." And we went, and he was wonderful. He'd written his one-act play about a Vietnam veteran.
Bigger and bigger.
This other last
song went, and
I remember
every one of you watching this screen, look out. Because soon, very soon, the most horrifying monster menace ever conceived will be oozing into this theater.
But when you said now, and you just kept beating the shit out of me, and I kept screaming, and Ma started screaming, and then the neighbor started screaming, "What the fuck is going on in there?" And you said, "None of your fucking business, shithead. You're sticking in your goddamn house, and shut the fucking door, asshole. Lock the door."
Outside the governmental structures are tapping into hundreds of millions, which they need to run their operations.
Now let's talk about profits. There's been testimony that Mr. Hakim and Secord were reaping large profits by marking up the arms being sold to the Contras. For example, Mr. Secord agreed to a suggestion of Tom Klein's that they maximize the profits from the last sale of arms to the Contras. Were you aware of that?
No.
How much money, according to your understanding, did Mr. Secord take from the sale of arms to Iran?
I still don't know. I don't even know that he did.
Was it your understanding that there was $8 million either in Swiss bank accounts or in investment accounts at CSF?
No, sir.
Money is the gas.
Facts are
that Secord and North and Hakim
our wonderful operators of a secret war, of a shadow government, operating for a shadow government, are people who still have control of $8 million of United States money, our money, and they are controlling it, got it rocked up in a Swiss bank somewhere, or off on a CD somewhere else.
How did you make the transition to film now? Here we go.
Larry Terman came to me with a book, which was The Graduate. And we made a deal to shoot The Graduate. And then Elizabeth Taylor suggested me to direct Who Was Afraid of Virginia Woolf. And I did that before The Graduate.
How did you prepare to direct your first film? Here was this challenging film by a great playwright. The usual struggle to adapt a play to film. Two great stars, one the definitive movie star, the other the definitive stage star. A few challenges, eh, for your first time out as a movie director. How did you prepare for that?
I had always looked at A Place in the Sun whenever I could. But I looked at it even more when I was getting ready to direct, because I did think that it was... I now still think that if you're going to direct a movie and you're going to study other movies, you're all right if you just look at that one picture, that it's all in there.
Yeah.
That he was a great movie director, and that everything about statement of theme, development of theme, and all the ways of expression that are available to us in films, a great deal of it is in that movie.
Like a falling star from outer space.
Boy, that was close. Come on, I want to see if I can find him.
An old man finds him, touches him, and this is the shocking result. From then on, there's no stopping the blob as it spreads from town to town. It's indestructible. It's indescribable. Nothing can stop it.
This town is in danger.
How can it be stopped? Mob hysteria sweeps one city. Before long, the nation and then the world could fall before the blood-curdling threat of the mob.
I was running halfway down the street, right? I forgot all about what the hell I was getting beat for, because, you know, you hardly ever do that to me anyway. No, I don't remember too many beatings, not too many wallopings, no. No, you had other ways, right? Better ways of torturing the shit out of me.
They have voices.
Since you are doing it alone, it is always to be held within the confines of your body. And it feels small, yes?
Yes.
A lot of pain and suffering for a little body. So you need to expand. There are a few things. First of all, you need to see that there is no good reason for you to think that what you have is catching. It is not a virus that you have, you see. It's just some sadness. And it is not catching. See, you cannot give your sadness to someone else. Other people have sadness as well. different people can trigger the feelings of sadness. But there's nothing wrong with that, because sadness should be felt. So that it does not rule. Is a very spiritual crisis. We'll use that word. The fact that you feel alone in body, there are not people around you in your life. There is not anyone close, let us say, to a certain degree, on a regular basis, to the degree that you would like. What that shows you is how you have separated from your God or the universe, all that is. Get it? So if you see it that way, what you have is more of information given to yourself by you than just a problem of being with others. Take a breath.
Kiavara Kiavara Blauru
wasn't only Mayflower wasps who seemed to embody America to them. American blacks were quintessential Americans. I mean, that was one of the things that made America America, the presence of black people. And the indigenous African American culture was of tremendous interest. I mean, the music, the dancing, the popular styles, and so on.
The Hollywood Jews may have wanted to marry into white America, but when it came to music, Jewish composers looked to black America. Harold Arlen, the son of a liturgical singer, or cantor, became one of the foremost popularizers of the blues.
Jews served as messengers, in essence, of black culture. They took it, they consumed it, they integrated it into their own cultural repertoire, and then introduced it to white America that was essentially willing to listen to Jews and to partake of what Jews had to offer in a way that they never would from blacks.
First on Broadway, and later in the Hollywood musical, this was the way Jewish music often sounded.
Here, isn't it?
I love it. I really do. I've never been this happy or comfortable anywhere.
Yeah, it's amazing how fast you get used to such a big place. I tell you, when we first came up here, I thought it was kind of scary.
I fell in love with it right away. When I came up here for my interview, it was as though I'd been here before. I mean, we all have moments of deja vu, but this was ridiculous. It was almost as though I knew what was going to be around every corner.
Dissolves, turn up again. Certainly in your work, you were very...
Absolutely. It had a big effect on me.
Can you remember your feelings the first time you took your place behind a camera?
I don't think I was really present for the first few years of all this. I don't think I was there. I was very bad at all the other stuff except the day's work.
And somebody was there. You've described movies as being different from theater in one very interesting respect. You have said that a motion picture is a dream.
Yeah. So I think that to see it is a dream because you finally really are alone seeing a movie in the dark. The reason that it's really like a dream, in my view, is that you're drawing on your unconscious all the time, and in a way very similar to the way our dreams come out of our unconscious. And your best work is a result of your unconscious. And you know how you love your unconscious, because it has exactly your sense of humor. You know, it, as evinced in our dreams.
Right.
You know, and it knows how to make its points to you, in that you can reverse that process and coax them out of your unconscious when you're shooting a movie, and that can be very happy.
Did you rehearse that film?
I rehearse all my films. And we rehearsed the hell out of Virginia Woolf, absolutely, yeah.
And you require rehearsal for it?
Yeah, I do, because it's the last time, among other things, it's the last time that you see it in sequence.
Right.
And that you know sort of what the shape of it is, because from then on you're doing it backwards and inside out.
Getting up one at a time to talk about this. And I have to tell you that in my opinion, these extraterrestrials are not imparting any great wisdom to these people. Basically, they are harassing them. You know, they're making fuzzy minds fuzzier. They're cutting behind their ears. They're hypnotizing them. They're giving them anal probes. I mean, one man stood up very depressed and said, "I'm from La Jolla, and I used to watch a lot of TV before I was taken aboard the spaceship. Now I don't. Now I just watch little dots come through the keyhole of my living room door and make crazy, crazy patterns in the room." Renee leans into me and says, "Spald, let's get out of here before what happened to them happens to us." Cross that off the list. Alienate HBO. And Christmas is coming. Christmas is coming. Christmas is coming. And the only reason I knew Christmas was coming because I heard it on the radio.
Assume it's not Polar Springs or something. It's good. It's damn good. Well, we're drinking the water while waiting the heat to reach the floor, you know. And all the time I can hear Renee's, you know, chanting in my ear, "You can change the house, but you can't change the location." And I want to get outside in winter to see that winter location, because Johnny Delfredo has told me that the view is priceless from two sycamore trees down in the Indervale by the trout stream. And I rush out down the door, he behind me. I go down over Shady Valley Road, down along the Indervale, puffing and huffing, headed toward these two sycamore trees. I turn and see him behind me, running in thigh-deep snow, he puffing, popping heart pills, saying, "The doctor told me never to walk in deep snow again. And I get there, standing by the sycamore trees, and I look all the way down that valley. It was fantastic. It was like I wanted to buy that day for $35,000. And I turn, and there he was behind me, all watery-eyed, staring. And suddenly, my heart went out to him. I saw him as this blue-collar, working-class, contemporary King Lear. There he was, standing there, thigh-deep in the snow. All three of his daughters had turned against him. There he was, King Lear, standing there next to me, the fool. And I thought, how could a man that looks like this sell me a bum house?
Tonight with The Graduate, we close another ring
I saw it today.
What?
Isn't that weird?
Why?
I haven't seen it for like 20 years, except, you know, when I'm switching around on television. And because it's coming back for its 30th anniversary, I had to check the print. We had to run off some new prints because all the old ones are all chewed up. It was a strange experience seeing it because it's a very surreal movie. I had never realized how surreal it is. And I liked it. It was very interesting.
In this picture, the image of water is always there. The fishbowl, when he's in his room with the glass windows, there's the pool outside. Things occur in the pool, of course, significantly. Was that a conscious decision that you made as you prepared this film?
Yeah. The decision about that aspect of what you see in The Graduate was about water and what holds it. It was about plastic, actually, and glass. It was about all the things that are contained in tanks and windows, and it was about the jungle outside the house in Beverly Hills. It was about the jungle in Mrs. Robinson we conceived of as the beast in the jungle, you know, and she always had an animal print on her. There's never a moment that she isn't wearing something that is an animal, either in a print or a fur and so forth. These things that I think of as secrets, unless it's something like The Graduate, which became something else, it's nice when the secrets remain secret, because you have to have them. You have to have all sorts of secrets when you're making a picture, or for that matter, doing a play. And they're all hooked into the theme, and they're all expressions of the theme and the story.
The film contains, among other things, one of the most famous seduction scenes in the history of film, when Anne Bancroft seduces the young man.
Look, I think I should be going.
Sit down, Benjamin.
Mrs. Robinson, if you don't mind my saying so, this conversation is getting a little strange. Now, I'm sure that Mr. Robinson will be here any minute now.
No.
What?
My husband will be back quite late. He should be gone for several hours.
Oh, my God.
Pardon?
Oh, no, Mrs. Robinson, oh, no.
What's wrong?
Mrs. Robinson, you didn't expect...
What?
I mean, you didn't really think I'd do something like that.
Like what?
What do you think?
Well, I don't know.
For God's sake, Mrs. Robinson. Here we are. You got me into your house. You give me a drink. You put on music. Now you start opening up your personal life to me and tell me your husband won't be home for hours.
So?
Mrs. Robinson, you're trying to seduce me. Aren't you?
Lyrics, they turn to their Jewish immigrant concerns, of people needing to belong somewhere, needing some kind of redemption through America. The Jews took these themes, but instead of putting them to Jewish music, they borrowed black forms that they saw as authentically American. In a sense, they wrote music in blackface. In the film Showboat, the white male lead literally internalizes the blood of his black wife.
What are you doing with that knife?
I'm not going to hurt her, you fool. Leave me be. I know what I'm doing. It won't hurt much, darling.
The Hollywood Jews wanted to be accepted as Americans. Their films advocated assimilation. Not just for Jews, but for everyone. They believed that if you were prepared to pay the price and shed your identity, then America should be prepared to accept you.
I have an unpleasant duty. I understand that you have a miscegenation case on board.
What do you mean, Mom?
How's that? A case of a Negro woman married to a white man. A criminal offense in this state.
No, no such thing on board this boat.
The name of the white man is Steve Baker. The name of the negress? The name of the negress is Julie Dozier.
You wouldn't call a man a white man that had Negro blood in him, would you?
No, I wouldn't. Not in Mississippi. One drop of Negro blood makes you a Negro in these parts.
Well, I got more than a drop of Negro blood in me, and that's a fact.
What's the trouble, ma'am?
In Hollywood, Jews trying to pass as Gentiles made films about blacks passing as whites. In Pinky, we see just how precarious that strategy is. For the outsider, things can turn in an instant.
What about her, ma'am? Now, if she even so much as thought of threatening you, we want to know about it. Or if she give you any of her impudence.
Shut up, girl.
Oh, excuse me, sir, but why are you two white men mamming her? She's nothing but a low-down colored gal. I tried to steal my man.
Megan, stop. Megan,
you
stop.
You heard what she said. He's got to slap her down. Unless it's true.
Yes, it's true. I'm colored.
Yeah.
My grandmother's Mrs. Dicey Johnson.
Mrs. Dicey Johnson? I ought to slap them both down, Chief.
Oh, hold it.
Why? I'll be going now.
Go. You ain't going anywhere till I tell you. Get in that car.
You mean I'm under arrest?
What do you think?
On what charges are you holding?
You heard what I said. Get in that car.
One of the things that made American films so exportable is that anyone anywhere could identify with so many of the themes of American movies, one of which was the idea of the outsider, which was a Jewish theme. Jews being outsiders, making films about outsiders. You see this even in monster pictures. I mean, King Kong. There's a film about, you know, an outsider. And yet, it's the monster, if you want to call King Kong that, with whom the audience sympathizes.
Nobody here but the chipmunks. I mean, WZBC and Newton. Authentic radio experience. Guaranteed by the Constitution of the United States. 29th Amendment. Ye shall have intermediated human contact experience. Virtually real. Pumped subcutaneously and sub-ionically into every molecule and pre-atomic molecule particle in your entire freaking body. 24/7, 365, rest of your life. And here, in audible form, is some of that experience out of Newton. A WZBC simulation. With a prefabricated Gary Geiserman doing some new metaphysics. And there you have it. Control it. And then flaunt it to your friends. You could even trade them amongst yourselves. It's a free country. The Casimir Brothers will be in 2 o'clock. Taking it all about 4-ish or so. Then you'll have simulated silence for several hours until 7. At which point the Good Morning ZBC show will start. Sometimes known as ZBC Rock, with three R's in front of it. Troll them, if you will. And I'll be back next Thursday night, 10 o'clock. No hockey game. BC will have won every game played between now and then. And no need to play anymore. Point will have been made in the sports enclave. In that sector of your mind that needs such an enclave and points. something like that. I want you to have a good week now. I have no idea what it's like to be you. I have only the vaguest idea what it's like to be me. Let it be a spiritual experience. For God's sakes. Use some common sense, my friend. We'll get through this together, all right? 552-4686. You could call up and ask for a Louie Louie. See what happens. Also, I gave an email address last week. It was slightly incorrect. And considering that cyber simulation is very precise, as we temporarily overindulge ourselves with this technology, kind of like a pornographic movie, for the time being, we have a surcease of technology, since we really don't know how else to do it. We must resort to techniques and the instruction thereof. So my correct email address, bluelight4@hotmail.com. Spelled the usual ways, the number will be the number 4, not the word Fowler. bluelight4@hotmail.com. A new company proudly owned by the Bill Gates, 400 mil. Make sure that Hotmail doesn't become the new email operating system of World Cable, soon to be worth many, many whatever's after trillion dollars of audio-video commerce. The likes of which mankind can only gawk. Gates' vision coming to a space-time quadrant, a nexus, if you will, near you. Get ready. Or get a pie ready, one or the other. bluelight4@hotmail.com for email. Don't necessarily expect an answer since I don't have a computer. I only play one on the radio. But you never know what may come of communication these days. Not mass communication either. Well, I'm going to go swim with the fishes. Get ready for my usual post-show dialysis experience. But I'll see you all next Thursday, 10 o'clock. Gather around the electronic toaster oven. And I will see you then. Probably have Jews in the Wood Part 3. There's a lot of that going around these days, like a virus. So we'll make sure to catch some so we can simulate a loving embrace together, 90s style. Cathode Ray Tube right now, local artist. New CD. What's it called here? Old Organics. Came out on April Fool's Day, but it is a real CD. He's played live at the station many times. Lives right round the corner, perhaps next door to you.
so much about the unconscious in movies is this thing that happened on The Graduate with the ending, in which on the last page it said, you know, they look out the window on the bus, some people seem to be running around in front of the church, and we got to shooting the scene, and I'd been very nice and sweet and patient with Dustin and Catherine Ross, and on this day, for some reason, I was awful to them. And I said, now you get on that bus and you gotta laugh because we've stopped traffic for 20 miles and we have the cops. I can't do this over and over, so just laugh. And they looked at me with horror. And they got on the bus and they laughed as best they could, and then they just sat there terrified of me. And the next day I saw the dailies and I said, oh my God, it's the end of the picture. And I, some part of me had made this happen without plan.
In Hollywood, the movies always end with happily ever after. You never see what happens next.
Your expectations are high as you now make a commitment to live and love together in a new unity which is now uniquely yours.
Your expectations are high, but don't be fooled. The reality is half L.A. marriages are bound to fail.
I was getting worried.
It looks like a dream, but these people are really doing it. At some point, they'll have to wake up. But Hollywood thrives on romance, and we all want to be in the movies. If it doesn't work this time, you can always try again. And again, and again, and again.
And so all of us gathered here, the universe and I, want you to know it's a special privilege to share with you in your joy on this most important day in your lives.
You will feel no rain, for you'll be sheltered for each other. Now you'll feel no cold, for you'll be warmth for each other. Now you will have no more loneliness, as you are companions with each other. And though there were two lives before this moment, there continues one life down the path.
Hollywood, every outsider could be transformed into an insider. Even in appearance, Carl Limley was an outsider. He resembled an elf. Not surprisingly, Universal's films often championed marginal beings who were persecuted like the Jews of Europe. At Warner Brothers, the Jewish sensibility expressed itself by an identification with the little guy. The prize fighters and the losers, the loners, and the gangsters.
This is Crispin Glover at WZCBC. I don't think I got there.
WZBC.
And you're listening to WZBC. Thank you.
I gotta go in about 8 minutes or so. Tarantula Boys will be in Legoland. Next Friday, not tomorrow, but next Friday night at midnight on Channel 3 in Boston Cable, on DocuSide, El Diablo's video show, will feature me in my entirety. Next Friday and the next two or three Fridays after that. DocuSide, Friday night, midnight, Channel 3, Boston Cable. New Metaphysics on TV. Something like that. And in the new copy of Nightlife, this is an article about this show as well. Comes out in a few days. You can get it at Tower Records or The Trident on Newbury Street, various barbershops and dog pounds around town. Good for the bottom of the birdcage kind of thing. Always good. Using timber products for paper until male marijuana is made illegal. Next Friday night, Channel 3, midnight, DocuSide, El Diablo, featuring New Metaphysics, live on video and videotape, almost live. Next Friday and the next two Fridays after that, be repeated. Anyway, I gotta go. Probation officer is tapping his fingers on the console right now. Catch you all later.